a scorcher, isn't it?
Oh, hot, hot, hot in the city.
Nothing to do but shave your dog, really.
You've got to shave it.
Shave it smooth?
Shave it smooth. Shave everyone in the house smooth.
And then weave a fan out of it.
Yeah.
Weave a fan out of all that family.
Yeah, a weft fan, yeah.
Yeah, a family weft fan. Mm-hmm.
Hope for the best.
London is insane today.
Is it?
I mean, this town, when it's super hot, it's super crazy. I mean, people
are... Are people crotchety?
There's so much crotchet going on. There's bin men just screaming. Screaming at each other.
Pouring hot rubbish on each other.
Pouring hot rubbish on each other. There's people just leaping, whole family just leaping into the rubbish grinder. Just praying for a swift end.
Someone started strumming outside, so we have to shut the window.
Oh, that's cruel. Yeah.
I might die.
So. People will start randomly strumming, because, again, he'll think, I need to cool the bushes. The bushes are too hot.
The bushes have got a big day tomorrow being bushes.
People are shaving their carpets. Anything with hair or with hair or fibres sprouting from it is being shaved down, tonsured.
There are actually charities on the street shaving the rats and mice, aren't there?
That's right. Wonderful work those people do. They didn't get any thanks for it.
And then there's a question, what to do with all that hair? You've got that hair mountain that you build up.
So
in
much
Regent's
hair,
Park.
The hair mountain.
Human, yeah. Fox, rat,
yeah.
Tourist. Just dries out in the heat.
It just dries out in the heat, becomes a fire hazard, becomes a massive, massive fire hazard.
Becomes a kind of hay.
It becomes a kind of hay. So you've got bales, you've got highly flammable bales. In all the major parks, you've got park fires breaking out left, right and centre. Frankly, it's now the average air temperature, the ambient air temperature is so hot now that it's actually hotter than fire. So you've got people trying to cool themselves down.
In a barbecue sets.
It's super hot. The canals are molten, as of this morning. London's canals.
What, the water's melted into a liquid?
Oh, no.
The water's melted and become... Because we know that water is, in fact, just a form of glass. We've already established that in season
so that
two.
That means the canal miners are out of work, aren't they?
That's right.
They can't drill into the canal anymore.
So they're just sitting around drinking red-hot molten lager out of boiling hot cans.
It's quite easy these days, actually, to make a mulled lager, isn't it? Just leave out a four-pack of lager on your front step. Yeah. And within a couple of hours in these kind of heat, you've got a lovely summer mulled lager.
That's right. All apples are now technically hot cider. They've all dissolved and hyper-atrophied into cider. There's a kind of heat haze that comes off the buses.
So a lot of people are seeing sort of bus stop mirages, aren't they?
Yeah, there's a lot of bus stop mirages. People are getting on the wrong buses.
People waiting in the middle of ponds that have gone. Standing on the back of a hot duck, waiting for a bus that's never going to come.
I should just say, for our listeners who aren't in the UK, the temperatures here are currently around 27.
Yeah.
So the world is burning.
So if you live in Australia or most of North America or most of
anywhere
Europe,
in the Middle East.
It's like a mild autumn day for it's you like- guys. But this nation has ground to a halt.
You'd probably be bringing an extra layer, most of you, to work today.
I beat the heat yesterday at Pontypridd Lido, which I've mentioned before.
Well done.
One of the greatest places on this fine earth. And when I got there, I can't remember. I've not been since last year. It's not really a winter thing for me. It's just a summer thing. And I think they turned up the music.
Mm. Party Lido, is it?
It was yesterday, so I turned up, and the music was very much like the music you get at, like, an 11-year-old's birthday party.
Very good.
So, Walking on Sunshine, Katrina and the Waves.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Safe disco hits.
Yeah, exactly.
It's something for the mums and dads to enjoy as well, isn't it, partly?
That's true.
With some of the since discovered predators curated out of the mix.
Yeah.
The Black Eyed Peas featured quite a lot. Tonight's gonna be a good night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is for tired parents who are absolutely end of their tethers, aren't they? Putting this birthday party together has nearly killed them. And they need something so happy, don't they?
Well, yeah,
happy,
the demographic of the Lido is very much parents of preschool children, three-year-olds, OAPs, and Benjamin Partridge.
Yeah. Hogging those lanes.
The rest of them are all looking at Benjamin Partridge going... Surely he must have something better to do. A person of working age. Shouldn't he be fueling the economy in some way?
is he the security swimmer? Maybe he's part of the, maybe he works for the Lido. Or is he one of those undercover, is he an undercover Lido inspector who's gone to seed? Well, you know what? I actually don't know what the difference is between a Lido and an outdoor public swimming pool.
Nothing.
Vibe.
Yeah, I think a Lido has a more kind of retro vibe, I would say, in a way.
It lends itself to a party. It lends itself to a speaker system.
Yeah.
With some disco hits.
And what's the sort of, I'm thinking a slightly more lax piss policy than is that right? Than you'd get in a...
Oh, yeah, you can piss in the pool, you can piss on the pool, you can piss at the pool, around the pool.
I would say 80% of the human beings in that pool are under three. So
So already they're pre, you can't even, they're pre-trained.
A lot of the older ones have got pelvic floor issues. I mean, it's an absolute
Yeah, so you've got both ends of, you've got the bookends of incontinence that that define that encompass our life, all of our lives, are there. And again, Ben Partridge in the just simply absorbing it.
So the music was going, and I was thinking, this is fun. This is great. It's sunny. Music's going. I felt good. I felt really
marinating
good.
Marinating in piss.
Marinating in hot piss.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if somebody was in charge of the playlist or whether actually it was like Spotify and Spotify did something. Hmm. But as soon as I arrived, as soon as I got into the pool, the music changed and the timbre of the music became very somber.
Oh, really?
So I got in, I was feeling really good. Oh, this has been quite pumped. Tonight's going to be good.
Nice.
Yeah. Just straight into Adagio for strings.
Are they trying to get a message to you, Ben, through the medium of DJ?
So the first song was Phil Collins' You and Me in Paradise.
Ooh.
Which I think is about like people starving, I think, isn't it?
It was his smash hit. Let's all help the homeless people while he was also giving quite a lot of money to the Tory party, I think, at the same time. I think he got himself in a bit of a pickle over it.
So that came on, and that felt like an odd choice. Like, oh, it's a bit downbeat off the back of all these disco hits. Okay, I'll keep swinging. Mm-hmm. Next one, Bruce Springsteen, Streets of Philadelphia. Really weird vibe.
Oh, that is an absolutely devastating song.
Because Bruce
song.
Can it's pick a... up the mood.
You know, he can.
Send a message at the same time, but with that one, he's bringing you flat down onto the floor, isn't he?
That is one of the most... it's a brilliant song.
Brilliant song. There's visuals fill your head of an Oscar-winning performance.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mr. Hanks.
But what I would say was the mood even began to affect now the three-year-olds. They sort of picked up on it, you know?
Mm. Especially the bit where he goes, door, door, do, do, be, do, be, do. Door, door, be, do, be, do, be, do. You remember that bit? You know that bit?
Which transmits very well underwater. Door, be, do, be, do, be,
do, do, be, do. Yeah, it sounds like it's underwater, doesn't it? Door, be, do, be, do, be, do.
I don't actually remember this bit. I did listen to it yesterday while I was swimming.
No, yeah, he goes, on the streets of Philadelphia, do, do, be, do, be, do, do.
That might be your Bruce Springsteen police mashup.
I'm on the streets of Philadelphia. That's my cheerful remix.
That's when you were gunning for those Ibiza DJ gigs.
Yeah,
it didn't quite pan out.
So I thought, right, I keep swimming. Surely the next one is going to be back into Party Bangers. They must have realised they brought the mood down, right? Swim. Streets of Philadelphia finishes with its... outro. Doobie doobie do. Doobie do.
Doobie doobie do. Do.
Next song, Ralph McTell, Streets of London.
Ooh.
Let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London.
All before you finished your length.
I'll show you something. They put on the kind of like sort of charity, ethical sort of like NGO sort of mix. It's all because it's all like that song's about homelessness.
Yes.
Obviously, that Philadelphia is about AIDS, the AIDS epidemic,
and Phil Collins is about homelessness. I guess
these are important issues, but you know, you're at a Lido,
yeah,
which should be an issue-free environment.
It should be an issue-free environment, a safe space. Yeah,
it harshed my vibe, I have to say.
Have you seen the early middle-aged man swimming at the Lido during children's hour? We'll play him something that'll make him finally fuck off. Maybe that's what was going on. Mike,
yeah.
Do you swim? Do you like quite a regular swim?
I love a dip, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a dip yesterday as well, but it was indoors, I'm afraid.
What was the soundtrack?
Zero soundtrack. All business.
What's your internal soundtrack when you're swimming?
Eye of the Tiger.
Down, 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 down. Just the intro there. Yeah, never climax. The down, yeah, down, yeah, down. Over and over again. Yeah. Down, down, down.
Lens. Lens.
Yeah, and I keep going on that until I'm sick, and then I'm done.
What's lens?
Lengths.
Oh, lengths. I thought you were about a German guy called Lens.
It's really hard to sing the word lengths.
It is, isn't it? Lengths.
And widths. You don't get a lot of ballads about swimming for fitness on the whole.
Do you have a...
armbands? No. And anyone who says otherwise is talking BS.
They're buoyancy aids, and they're used by all top swimmers in training, okay? I see you as a good... I'm imagining you're a good... You're a good swimmer. I think
we've mentioned it before. I've got
I know, we
very
haven't, yeah,
large, wide, flat feet.
Right, which work as feet, I suppose.
They work as their A game comes when I use them as paddles,
as rear paddles.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay.
So the thing is, I can. I've never seen Mike swim. I don't think, but I can absolutely imagine it. I can imagine it's quite a sort of magisterial thing to watch as he glides through the water, cutting through it like a...
Yet with an urgency. Think of a sort of a kind of like an alpha seal who's just realised he's being pursued by an orca. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the other thing I can picture with Mike is a superb bit where he gets to the end and has to turn round. Mm-hmm. What do you call that? You know, the flip, the direct...
When you do the roly-poly?
The bounce, the exactly.
I can bounce, like, of course. Me, yeah, I will bounce if needs be, but it's very painful. You shouldn't do it too often.
Because what I do is I slowly come to a stop, mm-hmm, and then just have a break, mm-hmm, because I'm quite knackered after one length normally. And what I'll do is I'll...
get your hamper out.
I'll get my aqua hamper out. And
your laminated, yeah, Grisham.
Have my laminated Grisham and my crispy when wet Quavers. Very, very, very expensive.
Now, because I was going to say, Henry, I don't want to be mean. As I was saying, I can imagine Mike cutting through the water with...
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, like a sort if of... you don't want to be, then... yeah, they simply just don't carry on then. So it's a very easy way to not be mean here, isn't there? Then, if you really didn't want to be mean.
Okay, I do want to be mean.
Let's see how much... Oh, okay. Fine. All right. Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, I've never seen Henry swim either. Mm-mm. I feel like it would look like if you threw like a pine marten into the sea.
Yeah.
And told him to rescue that sofa.
just like an element of struggle to it is what I'm thinking.
Yes, there is. I have been described as it looks like people have said to me after seeing me swim, Henry, were you transporting an invisible sofa up and down? Because it does feel like I'm hefting an invisible bit of furniture. What happens with me is I get to the end and I stop. I'm bloody knackered and I've got a multitude of different phlegms, different types of phlegm.
Oh,
so from deep greens up to the bright yellows.
Not a lot of municipal pools come with spittoons at each end, do they?
No, sadly. They don't. Not anymore. Not since various pollution controls came in London and people stopped having black breath. but what happens with me is there'll be a series of different densities and of mucus and phlegms which will come out. They'll pour, simply gush out of my nose. Mm-hmm. So you know the scene where Daniel Craig gets out of the water in the Bond film.
All right, yeah. I was thinking more the end of The Fly. Got carry on.
Yeah. It's basically those two. It's those, if you sort of imagine an AI mashup of those two, those two moments. Because I am coming out, so as my head comes out of the water, you know, there is water, is glistening water, is flowing off me, off my body. But also, so it's just different types, textures of phlegm. So, and there'll be some of them will be, because they've got different densities. Certain phlegms will be on top of other phlegms, or will be racing over them. They'll travel at different paces. It's quite a complex sight. There'll be eye phlegms. There'll be ear gunges.
Whole pieces of scalp have got soggy and come loose.
Yeah, those will be floating about. Once, actually, a piece of very, very fine Etruscan pottery for that one, which I still never managed to explain.
It's always worth sifting after a Henry swim, isn't it?
It is always worth a sift. You just never know.
Time I went to a pool in London, I thought, I think Henry's been here, because when I arrived, they had the huge sieve out, and they were sieving the water,
that's right.
The man-sized sieve.
Yeah, the
mega a man in a pith helmet, barking orders.
No, but it really, for some reason, it really expunges a lot of my. It works as a kind of head or a sort of facial enema for me. Mm-hmm. It really, a lot of stuff gets expunged out. Often I'll be crying as well.
Mm-hmm. Crying. So water or crying, sort of deep green gunge.
WTF. Water, tears, and phlegm.
Phlegm doesn't start with an F. Unless you mean someone who's Flemish.
That's what I mean. And yeah, so, and I'll be exhausted. And what I'll do is because people, you're not normally supposed to stop for a break after one length, in case there are people around who've just come into the pool, I'll say something out loud like, oh, bloody hell, I've been doing this for ages. Or I'll try and have the body language of someone that's having a little bit of a break.
Mm. Maybe after their 200th length.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be panting as well.
Pretend to sort of stop your stopwatch, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Yeah. Glance up at the clock. And then I'll set off for another one. If I'm really knackered, I'll do it on my back.
Have a break on your back? Or just float at one end of the lane on your back? Your belly in the air.
Yeah, I'll have a float.
Eating your aquatic quavers.
Yeah, because the body is less dense than water, so it's something you can do. But whereas were you, Mike, so that's what I do at one end. Whereas I imagine Mike will have some sort of extraordinary flip where he'll be swimming towards the end of it, and then his head will go between his legs. Mm-hmm. He'll be face to crotch just for a second. Mm-hmm. He'll be face to crotch.
Yeah. And the size of a coconut as well.
He'll briefly be the size and texture of as a coconut as his face perfectly folds into his buttock. Everything just fits perfectly. And then that's just for a second. He'll be the size.
He starts spinning furiously.
And texture of a coconut.
Create a small whirlpool.
Spinning furiously. And then it'll appear as if a human being is arriving in our dimension through a coconut-shaped vortex, because then his legs will arrow out of that coconut, apparently. They'll shoot straight up in the air.
With fantastic force.
Well, fantastic force. Mm-hmm. The pool will, at this point, be completely empty of water.
Just for a fraction of a second.
For a fraction of a second, and people have managed to photograph this. It's very hard, but the entire pool, an entire perfect swimming pool-shaped oblong of water will be suspended about 10 feet in the air above Mike's head, above Mike's feet, with all its contents, with all its swimmers as well, intact.
They often don't realise.
They won't know it's happened. They won't even know it's happened. And some of these will be hardened swimmers, swimming teachers, swimming professionals. Ben Partridge might be in there. Then suddenly that splashes back, you whip round, and then your moustaches become like just fully sodden now, and they kind of whip up. They whip round like two seals. Being sucked into a
Hoover.
Well, sort of into a Hoover. They sort of whip, whoosh, disappear. It's extraordinary. A rainbow is created. a perfectly circular rainbow is created at that point. That hangs in the air.
This is all happening in a fraction of a second as well.
Like, this is all happening in less than a fraction of a second, a microfraction.
And if you look very, very carefully, just up in the hazy corner on the tinge of the rainbow, you can see a very brief glimpse of a conversation happening at the middle of the Berlin conference.
That's right, yeah. And that's why you will often be, you'll often have PhD students, won't you, following you around, following you to the pool, trying to get a glimpse of that stuff.
Well, the only way that this was actually ever photographed was they made Mike do this inside the Large Hadron Collider, and he swam around it.
And then before you know it, and then you're off down the other end, and the whole thing starts again.
This week's topic, as sent in by Phil in Baltimore.
Ooh,
oh, nice. Is it about running the? Is it about running the corners?
I was about to say. I think all of our collective only reference to Baltimore being the HBO series The Wire.
Correct. So surprisingly nice drug dealers and surprisingly corrupt. mayors and town planners.
Oh, the town planning and series was something else, wasn't it?
It was actually my favourite, even though a lot of people didn't like it. Well, because it was when they tried to solve it by not having any corners, didn't they? They thought, if we could take the corners out of this town, where are they going to sell the drugs?
Wiggly roads only.
Wiggly roads only.
So thank you, Phil in Baltimore, for getting in touch. And the topic that the Bean Machine has picked, sent in by Phil, is volcanoes.
Oh, appropriate.
Isn't it just?
Tell you what, if I want to know about a volcano, I'm just going to look around me because I'm bloody in one. It might as well be. Isn't it? Oh, you know what that makes me think of volcanoes is I was listening to a thing about Silvio Berlusconi. Apparently he had a
private volcano.
Basically. Or he had a house in Sicily that had like something like 275 rooms or something.
And one of them had a volcano in it.
And ensuite volcano.
It's like a B-day.
An ensuite volcano. Because he got to a point where he was so corrupt that he could only go into a live volcano. That's the only way he could relax. Enough to actually relieve himself. No, but he apparently had a sort of artificial volcano or something. Yeah. It's quite a sort of baddie thing to have, isn't it?
But do you mean like a volcano-shaped mini golf course or water slide? Or do you mean lava producing?
He spent his weekends playing with some bicarbonate of soda and some papier-mâché.
I don't know. It feels like I feel like it would have been some sort of fake volcano. Yeah, he had a fake... Berlusconi sets off fake volcano to blow away election blues.
What an incredible headline.
This was the kind of thinking that he had.
Causing an ecological disaster.
So, freed of the burdens of state or impelled by a desperate desire to get back into the headlines, the former Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi is enjoying a summer of grand and improbable spectacles.
I didn't know he was a glasses wearer. Hey!
Whoa.
Nice. Thank you.
To celebrate Italy's big summer bank holiday on the 15th of August, I don't know what year this was. The Feast of the Assumption of the Virgin Mary. Mm-hmm. He organised the secret building of an artificial volcano in the sprawling, though congested, grounds of his Sardinian holiday home, Villa Certosa.
Sprawling, though congested?
Yeah.
Congested with what?
Well, he congested most spaces with teenage girls, didn't he, on the whole?
I think probably a lot of, scantily clad women.
And people trying to serve him Ritz.
And probably... most of the British Conservative Party.
Oh, hello.
Ooh, ouch.
Although, famously, it was Blair that was mates with him more than...
Yeah. Well, Thatcher's child, as I call him, in terms of his actual policies. Don't have time to go into it now. But best leader the Conservatives ever had, actually, Tony Blair. That's the same point again.
Or as I call him, Tony B. Liar.
Ooh. Yeah.
Actually, you know the worst leader the Conservatives ever had? Gordon Brown. That's the same thing, sort of similar point again.
It doesn't work as well.
Doesn't work as well, that one. Yeah. Right.
Satire, tick.
That's the Tories dealt with for 1 week.
It's really hard to do satire in these temperatures. It is. I'm sorry, it just is. So there, on this lonely, splendid stretch of the Costa Smeralda, already adorned with his Greek-style amphitheatre, a garden with 1,000 cacti.
That's a brilliant sort of despot slash Mariah Carey-style demand, isn't it?
No, and you know what it is? It's like, he's ordered, like, what's happened is he's ordered 20 cacti for the cactus garden, and the gardener's come and said, Italian accent or not? Maybe not in these times.
Yeah, let's pass this time.
Okay. The...
I did a very ropey Swiss accent in the last episode, for which I'd like to apologise.
So the gardener's come in and he said,
oh, I'm so sorry. I cannot. I don't.
He's a German gardener.
I've only got 29. I've only got 19 cacti. Sorry. I had an accident with one of them when I sat on it. Oh, so silly.
Of course, so Silvio Berlusconi hired Boris Becker to be his personal gardener.
That's right. No, but I think what would happen is a gardener, you'd have wanted like 20 cacti. The gardener went, sorry, one of them fell off the wheelbarrow and lost it. Sorry. And he got 19. And he would have turned around and gone, Really? You can't give me 20 cacti? Well, you will give me 1,000 cacti. Do you know what I mean? It would have been a ramping up.
Yes.
Because no one wants 1,000 cacti. It's the end point of an argument. Yeah. Also, it means he could push world leaders...
Into cacti
at any point in a garden, during a garden stroll.
Even at the G1000, should he need to.
Yeah. So anyway, the garden had 1,000 cacti and at least 5 swimming pools.
It feels quite countable, doesn't it?
It does, whereas the cacti feels like they've
been precise on the cacti.
They've put far too much effort into counting the cacti, and they've actually got home, they've got back home, and they've realised, we forgot to count the swimming pool. I can't believe it. We've literally forgotten to count the swimming pools.
Oh, it was at least 5, wasn't it?
It must have been at least 5. Couldn't swear by it.
There was
though.
The Lido, there was the indoor one, there was the one with the lanes.
There was the one with Ben Partridge in it.
Listening to somber music, weeping, weeping down a flume.
But anyway, so on this place, the media tycoon ordered the fashioning of this fake volcano cone on the top of a new artificial hill, which has already excited the disapproving attention of the local planning authorities. You're going to struggle, aren't you, for permission for a volcano? I mean, good luck.
If you're going through the proper channels, I would assume so.
I mean, good luck getting a rear dormer if you're in Ealing. But, you know, I wouldn't even bother with it.
But depending on where he is in Italy, it could be in keeping with the local landscape.
Oh, that's true, actually. Sardinia is a...
Yeah.
It's probably got volcanoes on it.
So it actually might be easier to get a volcano than a kind of...
Oh, that's a good point, than a red dormer.
What came out of this volcano, does it say? Did it splurge?
Good question.
Hot stuff?
I'm not sure.
Or stuff of any kind?
Porn stars. Pure bunga bunga.
Porn stars and cash.
I think he might have done it in a... It's a bit like Emperor Nero sort of thing, of like putting on spectacles. Mm-hmm. To keep the public on side, grand spectacle.
Giving away white goods willy-nilly.
What's the topic? What is the topic? Oh, it's volcanoes. Oh, no, sorry. So I can carry on with the article.
The topic is the garden accoutrements of Silvio Berlusconi.
That's right, yeah. Okay, so Mr. Berlusconi, when was this? This is in 2006. Okay, so Mr. Berlusconi is still the leader of Italy's opposition, despite rumbles of rebellion from his allies, and as such has been in regular touch with Prime Minister Romano Prodi in recent days over Italy's plans to send up to 3,000 soldiers to Lebanon with the UN force. This, we have to maybe keep that in the podcast.
Bit of fun, isn't it?
Bit of quite heavy news. But in between, he was putting the finishing touches to the most preposterous coup de théâtre of his extraordinary career. It'd be nice to be described as a media tycoon, wouldn't it, who put on preposterous coup de théâtres.
Well, baby steps, Henry. You're getting there.
I know, baby steps.
Start with podcast. Speaking of coup de théâtres,
yeah.
We're doing a live show in September that we need to mention in this episode.
Oh, yeah. So we are.
That's a good point.
Tickets have largely sold out, and I think by the time this will have gone to air, it will be sold out.
Which is another reason to sign up to Patreon, isn't it?
Because all the tickets were snapped up by Patreon.
They were snapped up by the Patreon members.
Yeah.
But you never know, it might be some. 16th, 17th September 2023, London Podcast Fest.
I'll put a link in the show notes, but there will be unlimited streaming tickets if you want to watch on a stream for both shows.
Perhaps from your homemade back garden volcano.
Yeah, will it match up to the coup de théâtre of Silvio Berlusconi setting off a... artificial volcano in his cactus garden? I cannot promise that, I'm afraid.
But certainly if you do like the idea of a crusty old and grumpy thing with steam coming out of it.
That's wider at the base than it is at the top.
That's wider at the base than it is at the top. And that is, get hot, has a load of bloody hot steam coming out of it all day. Then
dead goats on it.
Couple of kids out there, then probably you will enjoy.
Which one?
Watching us at the podcast, because we're a bit like that.
He's done it.
Pulled it round. We've got jingle flows, haven't we? Play the jingle.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage the old switcheroo.
Okay, yes, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you're saying that. What? I thought you were trying to say... That. Oh, he's gone the other... What? Oh, he's gone the other way around. He means that... Oh, that's what he meant. What? So,
what he said before wasn't actually... I thought it... Now he's gone the other way around with it. Oh, God.
It's the old switcheroo.
Right, volcanoes. Talk to me.
Personal experience-wise, Pompeii is my only personal experience.
Oh, yeah.
Vesuvius.
Of course.
So have you've been to Pompeii in the modern era?
Childhood, yeah. Teeny bopper, I think.
Did you see the wanking guy?
Saw everyone. It's quite they're very much the guided tour, very much... I remember it leaning heavily towards the lascivious, you know?
Oh, really?
Like if there's a sort of petrified couple banging or something like that, that's very much... That's something that where the tour guide will hover, and the tourists are happy to hover, including the parents who might be there with young children.
Is there petrified people having sexual intercourse at Pompeii?
They might just be embracing. I think they're embracing, but it's the sort of thing that invites comment.
Because, there's the quote-unquote wanking guy, but he probably wasn't wanking.
No, I don't know how you tell that.
I haven't seen any of this stuff. I went to Pompeii, I didn't see any of this stuff. To be fair, it was very, very hot, and I spent most of it sitting down.
It can't have been more than 28 degrees, though, Henry.
It can't, there's no way. I mean, I didn't kill me. But I remember just sitting and watching. For me, it was more about watching the city go by, just sitting there and watching watching the life of the city happening around me.
Okay. Yes, it doesn't sound like you actually went into the visitor centre.
I didn't go into... I didn't see a lot of it, to be honest.
Hmm.
I remember there was an amphitheatre at the end, and I thought, I can't face it. It's too hot. It really is hot there, which is ironic, considering how all the people there perished. But I actually couldn't... I mean, there was a point where I felt myself petrifying, and I thought I was going to almost become one of them.
Isn't it... The other lascivious angle on it, isn't it true that a lot of the buildings and stuff, you'll go in, and there'll just be like a big fresco on the wall with like loads of...
There's lots of Willy frescoes, yeah. I think that's the case in Herculaneum as well, just up the road. And they've really beautifully, beautifully preserved them.
Yeah.
Over the centuries.
Because it doesn't actually feature in a lot of the historical films they've made about the period, does it? So if you imagine the film Gladiator, if realistically, every scene in Gladiator, he would have just been surrounded by little sculptures with huge, huge dicks on them. And he'd be having to constantly move them out of the way. Rooms would have just been piled up with them on every surface, wouldn't they? Just little men with huge dongs.
He'd be signing stone dicks for his fans.
Yes, that's right. my name is Dominus Maraximus Melamius. This is a sculpture of the huge dick. I'm just going to move to the side. My name is Marcus Aurelius. I'm the brother of a murdered... So I just knocked over a guy with a big dick, and his ceramic dick has broken the dick on this one. I'll fix that later. But it would have just been constant.
I went to, in the British Museum, they had a Pompeii and Herculaneum exhibition.
Mm.
With kind of artifacts and things from there that they brought over to the British Museum.
Mm.
I assume they gave them back, but there's every chance they didn't. And there was a room where before we went into the room, there was like a little warning basically saying like, things get pretty lewd in this room. So, you know, if you've got your kids with you or whatever, it might be a bit of a weird thing. So I was champing at the bit.
And that was when you started barging, wasn't it? That was when the barging began.
I walked in.
You barged your way in.
And in the centre of the room, sort of lit up in a spotlight, in my memory, maybe it wasn't like this, was a huge statue of a guy shagging a goat.
Wow.
Yeah. In the missionary position.
Missionary?
Yeah.
That's unexpected.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Who's on top?
Whoa, 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 whoa. Who's
on top?
Hoof.
Hoof's on top.
Hoof's... Hooves akimbo.
It was hooves akimbo, yeah.
In the missionary position.
One hoof clutching the bedstead.
I'm trying to find an image of it.
You've got four hooves at play, haven't you?
This is a bit lewd, isn't it? Uh-oh.
Lewd content warning. Lewd content.
Hey, hey! The goat was flipped over on its back.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which we learned at our recent live show is the position in which you milk a sheep. But it was that.
But this was not a milking scene you were witnessing.
Oh, God.
No.
No.
What is it with the Romans and lewd pottery? That was their sort of... They just had a real weakness for lewd pottery, didn't they? Which is not something that really gets discussed or talked about very much.
Is it just an easier thing to start with? If you're becoming an artisan, is that... You must have done a bit of pottery in your art days, Henry. Is that... I mean, do you start with dicks? Is it just an easier thing to make the beginning, and then you move on to mugs and torsos?
Well,
and all
so.
The rest of it?
I think that's probably right, isn't it? Because a lump of pottery, when it's on the wheel, you hold it, it basically turns into a dick of sorts, doesn't it? And then that dick can then be a handle, or it could be folded.
It can be repurposed.
Different things. Mm-hmm. It can be repurposed, but essentially, yeah, you are starting with a. I suppose you are starting with a dick, aren't you?
I've just sent you a link to the image of the statue that I was faced with.
Oh, it's a form, to be fair. So it's not fully... The person having sex with the goat seems to be a faun, doesn't it? Is that right?
Well...
Do they have fauns? Is that a Roman thing? I mean, he's got goat legs, hasn't he?
Yes, he's definitely got human genitals.
Oh, yeah, one is a faun, but the other one is definitely a goat. And it's it's explicit, isn't it?
It's really horrible.
That is so bizarre. She is sort of nestled against... I'm going to say she. I'm going to... Against a sort of a banging rock.
Yes, she's been propped up on a banging rock. Mm. Yeah.
By the way, I'm quite wary of now that we've all looked at this image on using our computers that algorithms will now start chucking this stuff at us now. This is what happens, isn't it? So was Pompeii a city of pervs?
I think we have to assume so, don't we?
I mean, there's a reason why God set off the volcano and encased them all in hot lava.
Just to wipe it out.
So Herculaneum is also there, Mike. Did you go there as well?
I don't think we did, no. I think we just went to Pompeii.
Why is Pompeii the more famous one?
I think Pompeii's the famous one because it's got the petrified people. I think Herculaneum's the one where the town is very well preserved.
Right.
But Pompeii is where you got the blue stuff.
Yeah.
You got the people. The petrified people.
They poured in like alabaster and sort of made...
I think they were sort of encased in hot ash, weren't they?
But were they encased and then they sort of dissolved, leaving a space, the shape of a bit like, you know, like an Anthony Gormley sort of thing. They left a space and then they filled it up.
I don't know.
Something.
They didn't let us crack any of them open, unfortunately. So I don't know what's inside.
Okay.
They might have just been waiting to get out.
They might just be very, very, very bored in there.
Might have been caramelised. I have no idea. It might have been delicious. I don't know.
I remember learning we did it in history or geography at school or something, about how quickly they would have died.
Mm.
And it's because of hot gas.
Mm. Right.
So they all just died like straight away. Before like lava and stuff came, they just got hit by hot gas and then just died and almost instantly.
Let the bollockings roll in.
Time for your emails.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
Thank you to everyone who sent us an email to 3beansaladpod@gmail.com.
Thank you.
Thank you.
First email comes from Richard. Hello, Beans. I discovered your podcast a couple of months ago and I'm busy working my way through your back catalogue.
Very good.
I've just listened to the episode Bicycles, which includes an anecdote from Henry about being mocked by a small child for his missing hair.
Oh, yes, I remember that. Yeah.
I wouldn't call it missing.
No, there's no reward for finding my hair. No, it's...
There's never going to be a gritty BBC drama made about it.
Yeah. Although it's a bit of a paradox, isn't it? Because on the one hand, this could even be a... A riddle, couldn't it? It's like, what is not missing, but I still don't know where it is. Because I couldn't tell you where my hair is, but it's not missing.
But that's like me saying I couldn't tell you where my wings are. I don't have wings.
Yeah, but you didn't have them. And I did have hair, which in a way did feel like having wings now, looking back.
And you feel clipped now.
I feel so clipped.
I can't remember the story about you being mocked by a child, but give us a quick...
I think it was an eatery, wasn't it? A restaurant-type setting?
It was in a gastropub. I was mocked by a child.
The parents enjoyed it, I seem to remember.
And the parents looked between me and the child with laughing eyes and laughing mouths, laughing. As if to say, what a wonderful little...
Lovely precocious little... He's bang
precocious
on the money.
Little...
He's going to be one of the greatest bullies mankind has ever produced.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Richard says, I thought Henry might be comforted by this passage from a little book called The Bible.
Mm.
This is 2 Kings 2, verses 23 and 25, 225. From there, Elisha went up to Bethel. And as he was on his way, some small boys came out of the town and jeered at him, saying, "Get along with you, bald head, get along."
Oh.
He turned round, looked at them and cursed them in the name of the Lord, and 2 she-bears came out of a wood and mauled 42 of them.
Whoa!
Yes! Vengeance! Feel our claws! Feel our claws!
Oh, wow.
That's good.
Okay, well, by this time next week, maybe Henry might have learned how to summon a she-bear. Or two.
Or 2 she-bears, yeah.
2 of them. 2 she-bears.
40, that's quite a toll, isn't it?
42 of them. 42 of them.
Also, imagine being jeered at by 42 children.
You would be driven to she-bears, wouldn't you?
You would.
You'd be thinking, I think it's a bit much. I think I should just let it go.
Nah. Nah,
she-bears.
I've trained them for a reason. Let's go for it. Carol and Barbara, attack.
Well, thank you for that, Richard. And thanks to the Bible.
That's our first... thank you, Richard. That's the first time anyone's deployed nature's Grisham on the pod.
This next email is from Lisa. Hello, Beans. I thought that I would share my tale of injuring my pal, being inspired by Henry's thrilling and psychotic tale of his own.
Oh, was that about the stairs and pushing my friend down the stairs?
Yeah, I mean, also Mike did talk about firing
burning off
a lit Lynx can into the friend of his face, into his friend's face. But
I was worried, you know, that after we put that out, I thought maybe that was
the people would start copying us.
Yeah, there'd be a spate of copycats.
A spate of eyebrow combustions across the nation.
Yeah.
Well, Lisa's sharing her story of her own past
malfeasance.
Me and my pal Bob, in inverted commas, don't think he's really called Bob, were about 11. One bored hot summer day out in our mutual friend Biffy's garden, we thought we would indulge in an idle bit of blind man's buff. My friend Bob was it, and we were happily gambling around the garden, goading Bob in the way that only 11-year-olds can get away with. Mm-hmm. Just for those who don't know, that I can't remember how blind man's buff works. You blind one of your friends.
You blind, yes, that's right.
Blindfold, to be clear.
You blindfold one of your friends. And then what happens? They have to try and get you or...
Or do they have to then just start doing weights and beefing up to become buff, blind man buff? That's it, isn't it?
They have to find the protein shake.
That's right, the protein shake.
During the game, Bob started staggering towards the stone wall edging the garden.
Uh-oh.
I thought he was messing around, pretending that he thought the wall was us. I thought he must be joking, because me and Biffy were making plenty of noise quite far away from him. It turned out he wasn't pretending, because when he was just an arm's length from the wall, he suddenly accelerated forward and, making very inefficient use of his arms, smashed his face into the stone wall teeth first.
God.
Oh.
Oh, Bob.
He had to go to hospital for a couple of days and spent the rest of the summer with a sort of perspex mould over what remained of his front teeth.
Oh, Bob.
Oh, no.
Now,
that's awful.
That is awful, but I just want to say, I don't think that is Lisa's fault, is it? That's just Bob being incredibly bad at blind man's buff.
I think it reflects very well on Lisa that she thinks that it might be, because it clearly isn't her fault. But she thought, oh, should I have warned him? She's had the thought, could I have done anything different? I think that reflects very well on Lisa. And what also reflects well on Lisa is that she's even sent that message in to try and comfort Henry and I. But I'm afraid, Lisa, we're in a different bracket. Henry and I are both unforgivable, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
And I think your conscience is clear.
Well, chaps, I haven't finished the email.
Oh.
Oh.
Later on that summer...
I shot Biff.
With a homemade harpoon.
That's for damaging my stone wall. Okay, yeah.
Later on that summer, after helping him smash his teeth in, On another very hot afternoon, he let me wrap his head in a full-size woolen blanket, and I made him pose for photographs. He asked a few times, but I wouldn't let him take it off because he looked really funny. And after a while, he collapsed from asphyxiation.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Why was she wrapping his head in wool? What was the point?
Because it looked funny, Henry. Listen.
Yes.
Yes, he couldn't breathe, but it looked funny.
Oh, no.
She doesn't clarify whether or not Bob survived that particular...
Was it Bob?
Not Bob. ...incident.
Well, just no, he just collapsed. There. Yeah, just leaves it there.
He collapsed. We leave him collapsed.
Okay, yeah. Yes, fair enough. I think, yeah, sorry, Lisa, you are in the same club as us, after all.
Yeah.
Thanks for your email.
We've had a very curious email from John. Mm-hmm. My dear Beans, I'm writing to let you know that I've been listening to the podcast for around a year now. Mm-hmm. And I've had no clue that Sean Bean is a real actor.
I don't know. I can't help you there, John.
Oh, come on, John.
I don't know what John's expecting from this.
And not just a combination of sounds that you'd put together to create a mascot for your famous lounge. It was only during the discussion of Paul McGann that it dawned on me that the little cartoon bean coincidentally called Sean, who had existed in my head for the past year, is a complete lie. I wonder if other American listeners have gone through a similar experience. All the best, John.
I don't, with the greatest of respect, John, I don't think so. I think he's quite a well-known entity on both sides of the pond.
He was in Lord of the Rings, for God's sake.
He was.
You're trying to tell me you've not seen Sharp, you've not seen...
Ronin,
you've not seen...
Goldeneye,
you've not seen The Field, you've not seen...
Oh, he's on IMDb.
You've not seen Wicked Blood, you've not seen The Snow Queen 2... The Snow King. You've not. I can't believe us. There's a film called The Snow Queen 2, : The Snow King.
Mm-hmm. And there's The Snow Queen 3.
Three.
: The Snow King, : The Snow Cone.
The Snow Queen 2, : The Snow King 2, : The Snow Duke.
Starring Paul McGann.
Starring Paul McGann. So this guy, you're telling me this guy's not seen Jupiter Ascending, he's not seen The Young Messiah, he's not seen Kingsglaive, : Final Fantasy 15, he's not seen Drone or Dark River, he's not seen Taniel, he's not seen Possessor, he's not seen Wolfwalkers, he's not seen Mummies, Knights of the Zodiac, and he's not seen any of the episodes of Sharp, such as Sharp's Company, Sharp's Enemy, Sharp's Honor, Sharp's Gold, Sharp's Battle, Sharp's Sword, Sharp's Regiment, Sharp's Siege, Sharp's Mission, Sharp's Revenge, Sharp's Justice, Sharp's Waterloo, or Bravo 2-0.
come on, John, because we know, I mean, you're getting your pods, so we know you're not living in a Nevada cave.
Also, the idea that John thought, I will come up with a fun mascot for the podcast, and it's a bean called Sean. Like, from a standing start, that's a really weird decision, isn't it?
Sorry, John. Sorry to cause you confusion and distress, but I think you've got to do the work, John, okay? And this is you can't just come to a podcast like this unless you've got to do the work.
Can I say, John must have no interest in the fantasy genre, I'm gonna say. Because
or the historical military genre.
Or the historical military genre. Because if you've got any interest in those genres,
he's ubiquitous.
His career, every film is like.
He's also excellent at saying, "Bring me a horse."
He can imbue that with great meaning. He doesn't just mean "bring me a horse." He means, "I'm gonna do something on that horse," and it's gonna be pretty funky.
Bring me a horse. Can you have a look at my horse? I'm having some problems. It's just a bit gammy at the back. I'm not sure what it is. Just give it a once over. Mm. It's not had its HOT.
Horse of transport.
give it once over. But you know what he's not good at saying? He's not good at saying,
"I'm forever blowing bubbles."
He's very bad at that.
Mm-hmm.
Very good example. He's also very bad at saying, "I'd like to hire a city runaround for like 10 days." So I like those little Fiats. I do like that little, because I...
Bring me a Fiat 500.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen.
Doesn't work with him.
No. They've tried it. Of course they have. Doesn't work.
Doesn't work. Can you just talk us through
the clutch just because I'm used to driving a, I don't normally drive stick, but it was a lot cheaper to hire this, to hire stick for this.
And I know I come across as someone who could drive stick because I'm gritty, but actually I've been using automatic for a long time.
Yeah, I'm actually, it's hard to believe I'm rubbish at stick. Whereas, of course, horses are all stick,
they're
aren't all stick, they?
Yeah.
They're all stick.
Nose to tail stick.
Well, no, all horses are automatic, aren't they?
No, you're sitting on the stick.
Well, depends how. Yeah, they are stick. They are a stick. So a whether stick the stick itself is automatic, the stick is automatic. It's an automatic stick, exactly.
It's time for Listener Bollocking of the Week.
Oh no. Listener Bollocking of the
Week. Bollocking loaded. Pete from Copenhagen. Mm-hmm. Dear Beans, it pains me to write this email. I have a very relaxed attitude. Friends, both past and current, have described me as chill. Mm. Yet here I find myself emailing a podcast, being surprisingly lukewarm under the collar.
Uh-oh.
At almost 9 minutes into the episode T, I hear Ben reveal that he was, quote, in Europe for a number of weeks. Mm. I would assume, and reflect on me if I'm wrong, you never left Europe during those weeks. Even at the time of recording the episode, you were still in Europe. The United Kingdom is in Europe. P.S. Microbolic for Mike, who later mentions seeing the joys of Europe.
So this is to do with the fact that we're not in the EU, but we're still part of the European
continent.
Land, yeah, the European area. Is that what it's about?
I mean, I'm going to say I'm reflecting. This is a reflectobolic.
Okay.
Good. In fact, I'm going to bollock Pete.
Okay.
I think good. I'm going to support you on this, Ben, because I think it's clear we're talking about mainland Europe. But I think when we talk about Europe, it's a metonym for the better life, a better way of life. It's more interesting. It's more varied. There's better food. There are trams that work well. It's a dreamscape.
Yeah. Hot hazelnuts and chocolate have not just held hands; they have essentially had sex with each other and. Do you know what I mean? The hazelnut and the chocolate are one in Europe, aren't they?
Yeah, they're like the fawn and the goat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Britain has always stood apart from the continent to an extent. A bridge, one would say, across the Atlantic, the special relationship, hands over the water. There's always been a degree of separation between Britain and Europe. I don't deny that we are part of Europe, the continent. Mm-hmm. We are part of Europe, the culture, to an extent. But I think it's clear when we say, I'm in Europe, we mean mainland Europe. I think that's people understood what we meant.
Where we go to escape.
Yeah.
When we can. But
I wasn't saying that Britain isn't in Europe. Of course it is.
Well, we're sort of in and we're out, aren't we? Do we sort of like... I'm too hot for this. Try me in the autumn.
I just think it's about colloquial speech more than anything, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think so. We're in geographically. We're out politically and economically. But we've always been out holiday makeringly. How's that?
Perfect.
Yeah. That's what I think. That's
summed it up perfectly.
As good as I can do. I mean, Pete, it might have been that we accepted that, but if you try and bollock someone when it's 27 degrees centigrade, yeah, they're going to be crotchety anyway. You're going to get a bollock back.
If you bollock me, then I'll bollock you. Bollock back.
Take that, Pete.
Yeah.
Take that hot bollock.
It's time to pay the ferryman. Patreon.com/3beansalad.
Thanks to all of you who've signed up on the Patreon.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed.
Patreon, you can get ad-free episodes, you get our monthly bonus episode. Also, you get early access, where possible, to live show tickets, which came to pass this week, where they all sold out, basically, to Patreon listeners.
That's true. And we do plan on doing more live stuff enjoy the live stuff. The live stuff's an awful lot of fun. So we're kind of quite keen to get some more of those going when we can.
But not when it's this hot.
Oh, God, not in this heat, no.
Not in this bloody heat, no.
Come on.
But yeah, I think the aspiration certainly is to do a few more live shows around the place and spread ourselves a little bit more equitably.
Yeah.
To sign on up, if you fancy it.
You know, we're talking about the likes of Durham, mm-hmm. Doncaster, mm-hmm. Yate, Walsall,
Shrewsbury,
Isle of Man,
all under consideration.
Sark,
Scilly Isles,
Truro,
Bodmin, Gibraltar, Diego Garcia,
and the Falklands.
We should do a British Crown Protectorate's tour.
A Turks and Caicos special.
The Bermuda Files. Yeah, anywhere essentially that is an island that has a Union Jack in the corner of the flag, mm-hmm. and then whatever else on the rest of it, we're booking in.
There'll usually be a Union Jack in the top corner, weren't there? And then under that, there'll be a little picture of a laptop with...
accounting software on it.
Yeah, with accounting software on it, yeah. So, yeah, that's going to be the full flag.
And then finishing the tour, of course, on HMS Ark Royal.
As it reclaims the Suez Canal.
Do consider the Patreon. If you sign up at the Sean Bean tier of the Patreon, you get a shout out from Mike in the Sean Bean Lounge. And Mike was there just last night.
I was indeed. Where, of course, it was the...
It was the tax information barbecue.
It was the tax information barbecue. Thank you, Henry. And here's my report.
The paper shredders were freshly oiled and marinated, courtesy of Danny Amy. And the 70-metre-high marble Sean Bean head in the Sean Bean Lounge was adorned with Susie White's green-tinted family heirloom megavisor for this year's Tax Information Barbecue. Chris Bull and Sam Fields' Sausage Haven was as popular as ever and included Rory Ashley's seminar, Ketchup or Mustard, Faking Your Own Death by Injury or Plague, Ben Jones's Cocktail Sausage Networking Event for Bribeable Officials, and Eddie Shepard's Masterclass in Concealing Unregistered Diamonds in a Pile of Fried Onions. Laura Isabel and Michael Polanski's update on bilateral advance pricing arrangements from the perspective of a pork chop was confusing but visually spellbinding. Emily's undeclared spicy chicken wings were underdone and led Noah Lawson, Dijon Notayab and Mike Walsh to spend most of the event in the spectacular Cayman Islands-themed box, replete with palm leaf bog roll and toilet system turtle safari, all at a scorching 27 degrees Celsius. Beth Speak, Rebecca, Michael Olone and Dan Honeywell used barbecue prawn kebabs to create a scale model of the Thames for their guide to the best bridges in London for hanging game or mafia banking snitches. Patrick O'Connell reprised his role as the inheritance tax burger. Thomas Elsing's landfill duty-inspired brisket was as tangy as ever. And Katya Ognanova's lecture in the hog roast suite, pulled porkies, tax evasion and slow-cooked meats in a post-truth age, absolutely stank of apple cider vinegar, but was standing room only. Since the last barbecue, Alistair Miller and Paul Devlin have swapped places on the IMF's 10 most wanted list and so exchanged ceremonial suckling pigs. A moving moment captured then eaten by Carly Haynes in the form of a beef gyros fresco. Neris Lewis's transactional net margin method chicken souvlaki competition was won by Lockie, with Boogie Margouf and Gordon Murphy taking joint silver for their double-dipping jajiki innovation, and James Karp being disqualified for an incorrect ratio of red peppers to travel expenses receipts on the skewer. Mark Marlowe was delighted that his crunchy tropical barbecue crab shell on Shell Company Do's and Don'ts Limerick Corner had its lowest death toll in 5 years. And Isabel's corn on the cob invoicing presentation was an unmitigated disaster. Thanks all.
So that's the podcast. We'll finish with a version of our theme tune sent in by a listener. This week it is Ben from Bremen.
Thank you, Ben.
He says, "Hi Beans, I had some time on my hands after listening to the Essence of Fear episode, so I made this Twangles and Chunks version."
Twangles and Chunks. Like
Twangles
it.
And Chunks.
Well, thank you, Ben, and thank you everyone. Thanks, for Ben. Listening. See you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you very much. Goodbye.